You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, y'all, first and foremost, I want to say I hope everybody had a great week. I hope everybody's been staying warm, y'all, because that cold weather really just ran up on us, man. Like, I don't know about y'all, but I woke up in the morning and I was like, yo, it's cold. I mean, you don't even have to sleep with the fan on at all. You don't need to turn on any air conditioning. If you turn on your AC right now, while the weather's like this, I mean, depending on where you're at, but I know down here in Georgia, it's cold. So I don't know about y'all, like I said, but man, this cold weather really just ran up on us. And hey, welcome to the fall. Welcome to the fall. But it's exciting. Love the fall. Love the weather. Exciting time of the year. Man, this year's been, it's been going by wild, man. It's been moving pretty fast. I mean, we're in that last stretch. And look, we'll be heading into 2025 before we know it. But, you know, a lot of good things going on, you know, around the world of sports. So just wanted to go ahead and kick things off and talk about that, man. Let's jump into the NFL, because we had two big trades that took place this week in the NFL. First and foremost, Devontae Adams being traded from the Las Vegas Raiders to the New York Jets to reunite with Aaron Rodgers. And then we had Amari Cooper being traded from the Cleveland Browns to the Buffalo Bills. So let's look at both of these trades, shall we? And specifically looking at Devontae Adams and the trade to the Jets first. Looking at this situation here, I think that this is a huge, huge trade for Devontae Adams, obviously being traded and reunited with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, we all kind of, let's be honest, saw this coming. I mean, this isn't anything new. I don't think that this is anything that's shocking to anybody. It's definitely not shocking to me. It was just, like I said before, when it first happened, it was only a matter of time before this ultimately was going to happen. And again, I mean, we knew, you could see that, you know, Adams was not, he wasn't happy. he just wasn't happy in Las Vegas, right? And, you know, we just know that situation where he went over there and he was thinking that, hey, like, you know, this is an opportunity to reconnect and with Derek Carr. And we know how that ended up turning out. You even saw, I don't know if any of you all saw the show Receiver on Netflix, but we saw the frustration there. You saw how it was just not, it was not the right fit, right? Like, it just wasn't. So now we have a situation where, again, he's reunited with Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback who he spent 8 seasons with in Green Bay. He's caught 615 passes from Aaron Rodgers for 7,517 yards and 68 touchdowns during their 8 seasons together in Green Bay. So with those stats, that's the most in all three categories between any combination of active players. So we know that they're, you know, the connection and the chemistry between the two is there. I mean, it's to the point where, you know, it had grown to the point, and I'm pretty sure that's still there, where, I mean, they could literally just look at each other. Aaron Rodgers would see the matchup, and Adams would know what he wanted to do. Aaron Rodgers knew what he was going to do beforehand, whether that was a quick slant, which was one of the their bread and butter plays, obviously, that they ran a lot with Devontae Adams' quick step off the line and really kind of breaking down, is really exceptional at breaking down the defender and the cornerback that's guarding him and getting to his spot quickly. So beating, you know, taking his inside and, you know, and making it easy for Aaron Rodgers. So, again, this is big for them to reconnect. And obviously we know that with this move, He'll be joining wide receiver core that includes Garrett Wilson, who he's currently leading the team with 41 receptions. And then you have Alan Lazard, another guy who came over from Green Bay, obviously. And then you got Mike Williams as well, and a few other guys. But, I think that, you know, this is a huge get for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. One, you know, team who people said, hey, you know, these guys are Super Bowl contenders, you know, with just Aaron Rodgers on the field, right? And we saw what happened his first year. He got hurt in, what, the fourth play, third or fourth play of the game, out for the year. And so this being his second year, just trying to get things rolling, you know, and their team, you know, they obviously just also fired Robert Saleh, their former head coach. Just, you know, again, hadn't been able to really get things going. Just lost the game on Monday night, a tough loss to the Bills. But currently right now, you know, in the standings, in the AFC East, they're sitting at 2-4. They're third in the AFC East. And things just have not been going well for them at all. So with the addition of Devontae Adams, I think that obviously gives their offense another spark. But again, the defense, you know, at the end of the day, the defense needs to show up for the team if they want to have any type of success. And, you know, that just hasn't been the case consistently for them. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, obviously, if they're outscoring their opponents, that kind of offsets that. But, you know, you're not just going to come out and just outscore everybody. This isn't college football. So they're going to have to get this defense figured out if they want to move up in the division that, you know, the Buffalo Bills are owning right now. And really, it's their division to lose, if we want to be honest about it. So we'll see what happens with that. But again, good, a huge pickup for them. And I know a lot of people are excited, especially Jets fans, to be able to see this connection. So let's see, you know, how everything shakes out. And then let's move on and talk about the trade from Amari Cooper being traded to the Bills from Cleveland. First and foremost, thank God Amari Cooper is out of that crazy, awful situation that he was in Cleveland. Deshaun Watson, just awful at quarterback. I literally, first time, as soon as I saw this trade, I was like, thank God Amari Cooper got away, because Deshaun Watson is really just a shell of himself. I mean, he has no idea how to play the game of football anymore. He is just not the same player. You know, with all that, the chaos that he brought upon himself with that situation that happened a couple years back. And then, obviously, you know, with him being suspended and then coming back, and he just has not, you know, looked the part at all. And I'm surprised he's still starting at quarterback right now, because he's just been awful. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Amari Cooper being traded to the Bills, they finally replace Stephon Diggs, their number one wide receiver at the time, before he was ended up being traded away. But you know, I think that the biggest thing right here with Josh Allen being able to get a guy like Amari Cooper is the fact that Amari Cooper is reliable. I know he's 30 years old, but Amari Cooper has consistently been, you know, a solid receiver in the NFL. He's had just in 2023 a career high receiving yards of 1,250 receiving yards last season. But his struggles have come along with that offense in Cleveland that have failed to score. You know, I mean, they failed to score 20 points in their first six games, right? But Cooper, you know, he led the team with 250 receiving yards, two touchdowns, but only 4.7 yards per target. That ranked second worst in the NFL among qualifying pass catchers. So he also has three drops, and those are tied for the sixth most in the league right now. But obviously a lot of that's going to change with him having an actual quarterback in Josh Allen. And Josh Allen isn't, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and say that Josh Allen is just this great quarterback, but he is way better than Deshaun Watson is right now. And so I think that that's going to create a lot more opportunity for Amari Cooper. And then you also look at the Bills roster. You know, they got guys across the board, you know, pretty solid wide receivers. You know, nice little wide receiver core. Yeah, Keon Coleman, you know, the rookie. He's a solid guy right there. You got Curtis Samuel, another guy who's a solid wide receiver as well. And so you got Mac Hollins as well. So, you know, pretty solid group. Not the best, you know, in the NFL, but it's working for the situation that they're in right now, right? And then you add in the running game. You know, Ray Davis, a solid running back. That's out of Kentucky. He's been stepping in and filling the shoes of James Cook while he's been injured. But again, this offense has, you know, they found ways to win, right? They currently sitting at 4-2, number one in the division. That is theirs to lose. And then you look at their next lineup of games. I mean, they got the Titans coming up. That's a W. You got the Seahawks coming up, the Dolphins, the Colts. And then so their next four games, you know, very winnable games. And then you got the big one, right, facing Kansas City on November 17th, which will be a huge matchup for them, being that Kansas City is, you know, the team to beat right now, right? So, yeah, a lot of wild stuff going on in the NFL, but those are two big major trades that I wanted to make sure I covered because they're going to impact both the Jets and the Bills in a positive way. Keeping things in the NFL, let's talk about the NFC North, right? So is the NFC North the best division in the NFL right now? And I have to say absolutely 100% positively that the NFC North is the most competitive division by far. They're the best division in the NFL. I mean, look at the teams, right? The Vikings are 5-0. The Lions are 4-1. The Bears and the Packers are both at 4-2. The entire division record is 17-5. 17 wins, 5 losses. You know, they could definitely get at least 3 teams in the playoffs this year. Hoping that it, you know, if that does happen, is Vikings, Lions, and Bears, and the Packers are the ones that are left out. If you don't know me by now, you should know why I would want the Packers to not be, you know, to finish last in the division. Being that I'm a Bears fan, for all of those you did not know. But, you know, love what I'm seeing from this division so far. I mean, showing week in and week out the amount of playmakers, you know, featuring teams that are leading, you know, being the Bears and the Packers being two teams that are leading the NFL when it comes to takeaways. So defensively showing up, offensively, you know, lighting it up on each four teams, right? Each of these four teams have been lighting up offensively. I mean, you see what the Lions just did, beating up on the Cowboys, you know, just this past Sunday. I mean, just 40-9, just dismantling that entire franchise on one Sunday. Jerry Jones is spiraling. The fans are spiraling. You know, it's to the point where it's not even funny anymore to a lot of people, right? You got Jerry Jones going on radio shows threatening the radio host because he's getting upset that they're asking him questions about his decision making and lack thereof. I mean, it's the Lions really they broke him officially, you know, this past Sunday. You know, and again, you look at the Vikings, which was my surprise team. You know, I've said this up until this point, you know, didn't expect them to come out the gate swinging like that, 5-0. But you know, you see what Sam Darnold is doing with the weapons that he has. I mean, you got Justin Jefferson, you got Addison, you got a solid running game. You know, so they've been doing their thing. And then you know, you got my Bears. I mean, let's talk about Caleb Williams, the improvement each and every week that he's making. I mean, if you haven't been paying attention to what Caleb Williams has been doing, I encourage you to do that because over the last 3 to 5, I mean, since the beginning of the season, his passer rating has improved. His numbers have improved. You know, he's constantly growing. He's learning. The game is starting to slow down for him. I mean, he was voted the player of the week. 282 total passing yards, 4 touchdowns. 79% completion percentage against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and was the first quarterback to have that successful of a performance in London. So nobody has been able to do that. And you can say all you want to the type of defense that he's playing. Oh, he's playing against the Jaguars. They beat the Panthers. They beat the Rams. You can say that, you know, say what you want, right? Say what you want about it. But the fact that he's a rookie quarterback and he's getting it, right? The game, like I said, the game is slowing down. He's making the correct reads at the line of scrimmage. He's checking. He's changing plays. When the pocket breaks down, he's starting to get out the pocket. There are times where he stays in the pocket and holds onto the ball a little longer than I would like and what the fans would like. But he doesn't make it, you know, too big of a habit. As the flow of the game continues to go and throughout the course of the game, he gets better as the game progresses, right? He's taking advantage, and this offense is taking advantage of the hurry-up game, right? That two-minute drill type of offense where he really thrived at USC has been creating a lot of success for him. And, you know, I've seen us this past Sunday, I saw us run plays that I've never seen the Bears offense run. I mean, it was just, oh, my God. Like, the touchdown to Cole Kmet where you got Keenan Allen coming in motion, and he's coming back running behind Caleb Williams. You fake the screen to Keenan Allen. You fake the screen to DeAndre Swift. And then you got Cole Kmet running up the scene down the middle of the field. And then Caleb just hits him right in stride. And Cole Kmet makes him, you know, just runs the guy over, making an athletic play on his way to the end zone. And then you saw Caleb Williams, just the throws that he's making, man. Threading the needle time and time again, especially on the touchdown to Keenan Allen. Man, it's... Huh. Let me stop and take a sip of water, because it's just, I gotta soak it all in, y'all. Give me 1 second. Yes. Woo! Bear down. Chicago Bears. I love it. This is what a time to be alive. What a time to be a Bears fan. I'm excited. And then, you know, you look at the next big matchup. There's a bye this week, and then you have the battle between the number one and the number two pick, Bears and Commanders, Sunday, October 27th. Game got flexed from 1 o'clock to America's Game of the Week on CBS. Excited about it. Can't wait to be locked in. But, man, again, this division is something serious. And if there was a way that they could get four teams, I'm sure they would. But, you know, I at least think the NFC North, I'm predicting, will get three teams in the playoffs. So yeah, man, excited to see how the rest of the year shakes up. But yeah, NFC North by far best division in football, and there's no argument there's no argument there. Let's move on. Let's talk about college basketball. The AP top 25 poll was released. The preseason AP top 25 poll was released. And let's look at our top 10 teams. I'm not going to run through the entire 25 teams, but just want to hone in on the top 10 right now, give you guys a little look in case you missed it. You got Kansas coming in at number one, my Alabama Crimson Tide coming in at number two, UConn number three, Houston number four, Iowa State five, Gonzaga six, Duke seven, Baylor is eight, North Carolina is nine, Arizona is 10. So, yeah, looking at... you know, looking at the top 10 and even really the top 25 overall. I know it's preseason, so not too much to really dive into here. But I think that, you know, obviously the top four teams, teams that are coming into this year with a lot of talent on their roster, you know, not to be biased, but specifically, you know, looking at Alabama and what they've been able to do. Kansas is always, you know, from a talent perspective, they always are there. UConn is back. So we know UConn is back. They've shown it. We saw what they did last year. I mean, they are for real. And then you got Houston. Houston has been, you know, over the last few years, even going back to, I would say Houston, what, 3 years back, maybe even a little bit longer than that. But Houston has been showing up, right? They have a solid basketball program. And then obviously you got the Dukes and the Gonzagas and the UNCs of the world and the Arizonas that are always in the mix. But to see Alabama coming in as the number two team Right now, the preseason says a lot about what Nate Oates has been able to do from a recruiting standpoint. And so I'm excited to see, the talent on that roster and how they get better defensively. Because I know, we all know that Alabama has been, offensively, over the last couple of years has been electrifying. Defensively, got to get better, had to get stronger in the paint, which I think that, did a good job of addressing that. So now it's time to see it being put into action on the court. But again, Kansas, UConn, Houston, you got Iowa State up there. Let's see what happens there. Also looking at some other things, I think that you got Purdue there at 14. They lost some talent, obviously, in the paint. But that's another team that always seemed to be up in the mix, eventually find their way up there in the top four. But I still don't trust Purdue. I don't care what y'all say. Just wanted to give you guys a quick preview of the top 25. And then, honestly, looking at the SEC as a whole, I'll tell you guys right now, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams from the SEC currently in the top 25. And I'll run those teams down real quick. I'm an SEC guy. So you got Alabama, again, number 2, Auburn 11, Tennessee 12, A&M 13. Then you got Arkansas at 16, Texas at 19, Florida at 21, and Kentucky 23. And then you got Ole Miss at 24. So, hey, let's see what happens in the SEC, man, who I would add is one of the most competitive, if not the most competitive, conference in both football and basketball. Again, no argument. That's just how I feel. The facts are the facts. The SEC is just above the rest. So with that being said, let's transition. Let's talk college football. I know y'all are probably waiting on me to address it, and I will. Don't worry about it. And no, the reason why. With Alabama losing, that is not the reason why I didn't have a show last week. I just had some stuff come up, but just to show you how I'm not avoiding the smoke and ducking the smoke. Yes, Alabama, I'll go two weeks back. I know we already had a game since then, but Alabama did take a L to Vanderbilt. People were blowing my phone up. People were calling. They were texting. I feel like I got a couple of emails. I don't know. I might have gotten a couple of emails here and there. It was bad, right? I think that was a tough loss. Defensively, they did not show up at all. The offense was pretty much trying to carry the whole game. But putting up 35 points in only 18 minutes just goes to show you how electrifying this offense is. When we needed the defense to get a stop, they did not get a stop. So, hats off to Vanderbilt. That just goes to show you can't overlook your opponent. And I think there was a hangover there from just having that huge win against Georgia, which I will add, I was in attendance for, that miraculous game. Ryan Williams, was running. I was literally on the side of the field where Ryan Williams was running towards, me and my brother. We were up, obviously up near, up some rows and stuff, like up a couple of sections, but we saw the entire play clear as day. Just goes to show you, and even really, really and truly, not even just the fact that you can't overlook your opponent. The SEC is just better now. I mean, teams are flat out just better. The talent is spread out across the board. And we underestimated Vanderbilt, right? Regardless, you don't lose to Vanderbilt. I mean, we hadn't lost to Vanderbilt since 84, right? I did not see that happening. I didn't see that coming. There's a lot of things we got to clean up, defensively. Kane Womack has to do a better job. That was just piss poor. But again, I'm not going to crucify this team. I was pissed off after the game, during the game, obviously. But I do think that, that just comes with the growing pains of having, a new coach, having a new team, and not to make any excuses or anything like that, because at the end of the day, you know, they're on the field, so you got to make the plays, right? And so we've seen over the last couple of weeks the struggles there, you know, with Alabama's defense, right? And so I will address that a little more, but I wanted to talk about the top 25 right now. Let's just hone in on the top 12 because those are, you know, we have a 12-team playoff right now. So looking at the top 12, you have Texas coming in at number one, staying put. Oregon moving up to number two after a big win over Ohio State. You had Penn State moving up a spot to number three. Ohio State down two spots to number four. Georgia staying put at five. Miami staying put at six. Alabama staying put at seven. LSU five spots up to number eight after a big upset win over Ole Miss at home in overtime. You got Iowa State up two spots to number nine. Clemson staying put at 10. Tennessee down three spots to number 11, even after an overtime win against Florida. And then you got Notre Dame down one spot at number 12. So those are your top 12 teams currently right now. And, you know, just looking at this, obviously we've seen things shake up and things kind of, you know, shift. Texas has been, you know, Texas, Oregon, Penn State all unscathed right now. And Miami as well, 6-0. And then Iowa State, 6-0. And yeah, you know, I think that, you know, the good thing and the fun thing about this year is that each week is changing. I mean, even the week when Alabama lost to Vanderbilt, it was five teams total in the top 12 that had lost, or top 10 that had lost. So, you know, that it's any given Saturday, right? You know, anything can happen. I love the fact that this year, there's really, even with Texas being at number one and Oregon being at two up there, I still don't think there's just that. Now, Texas has looked the most polished, I would say, out of all the teams. So I think that they are a tier above everybody right now. But I also think that, you know, there's not just that one team that we could say that's definitively just going to run away with the entire thing. Right now, Texas is looking the part, right? Texas, and they are for real, right? I'm not going to sit up here and take away from anything they're doing. They had a huge win, 34-3 against Oklahoma, where it took a little time to get, you know, for Ewers to get going. But he's back. You know, Arch Manning held down a fort while he was out injured, but he's back now. But, yeah, no, I think that Texas has proven to be up there and for real. And so they are the team to beat, right? And a team that has eyes on getting to that, not only the SEC championship, but a national championship under Steve Sarkisian. Got a big game coming up, and we'll get to that shortly. But I think that, you know, we're in that middle half of the season right now, and it's really crunch time for a lot of teams. And, you know, Texas being, you know, having big win over a top 10 Michigan team at the time. And then you got the blowout win over Oklahoma. They've been impressive. And if they turn around and get a win over Georgia, number five Georgia, man, that's just going to strengthen their resume. And I don't really see any struggles for them for the rest of the year, to be honest with you. Until, I mean, you may have some challenges, I think, looking at it. You know, there will be some challenges, so I'm not going to sit up here and say there won't be any struggles, because let me not jump the gun, because this is college football and anything can happen. So let me just pump my brakes there with that. But yeah, it's that I don't have any complaints about the top 12 right now in these rankings. I'm always skeptical of Penn State, because Penn State historically, I mean, they've been ranked up there, and then they've, you know, they've ended up losing. And so I don't know how much I technically trust the Penn State team. I mean, USC was giving it to them. They did have a really solid comeback win. But, you know, I'll see, you know, once they play Ohio State, and, you know, they are going on the road to play a tough Wisconsin team. So we'll see how they fare against Wisconsin in that environment. And then we'll also see, again, how they are when they host Ohio State. So, Yeah, those are the two biggest, the toughest tests for them in the remainder of the year. So we'll see what happens. But moving on, let's talk about the two huge matchups that we have. Get your popcorn ready. In college football this weekend, man, we got Alabama versus Tennessee. I should say number 7 Alabama versus number 11 Tennessee. And then we got number 5 Georgia going on the road against number 1 Texas. Cannot wait for both of these games. Let's give a quick preview of both of these matchups, and then I'll obviously give you guys my picks for who's going to win both of these games. And so let's take a look at Alabama and Tennessee. So Alabama going on the road to Neyland Stadium, one of the toughest places to play in college football, one of the loudest stadiums in college football. But look, you know, Alabama coming off of a nail biter, escaping South Carolina 27-25, which was just the craziest, wackiest game in the final. I would say the craziest last like 3 minutes of a game that I've ever seen, where Alabama, you know, scored a touchdown to go up by 7, and well, go up by 8. And then you got South Carolina coming back, scoring a touchdown. And then they failed to get the 2-point conversion, but then they ended up getting an onside kick. And then he ended up, you know, throwing a somewhat of a Hail Mary, facing pressure. Did Sellers pretty much threw up the, you know, Hail Mary to his receiver, and then ended up intercepting the ball. Demonte Jackson nearly taking a knee in the end zone, which a lot of us felt like if he would have took a knee, would have been a safety, which would have tied the game up and sent it to overtime, and I would have completely lost it. But going back and researching, they said that with his momentum bringing him into the end zone, it wouldn't have actually been a safety. But again, I'm just glad that he did not put it in a situation for that to even be discussed. So yeah, just looking at the team, obviously did better. I would say they did better defensively with getting pressure. So did have some sacks in that game. But I think the biggest thing and what continues to be the Achilles heel of this Alabama team is the defense. I'm not concerned about the offense. I would like to see us run the ball more. We need to get Jam Miller and Justice Haynes some more touches. But ultimately, that's not the issue. I do think that, you know, the defense failing to get off the field at third down and fourth down. I think that, you know, looking at that game, giving up a 3rd and 15 on what would have been a big pivotal, I wouldn't say a huge pivotal moment, but that's a moment you got to get off the field, right? There's no excuse to be out of place, out of position, trying to be a hero. Play your third of the field and get off of the field, right? Got to do that. On the back end, got to be more disciplined, right? And that goes back to the coaches. I think that, and then there was a touchdown that gave up on 4th and 9 where the guy was just wide open, blown coverage. There was a post route, and then there was a wheel route. So there was the South Carolina sent the post up the middle of the field, and then they followed that up with a wheel route from the receiver that was on the inside wide receiver. But Malachi Moore being on the that right end of the field ended up taking the post route instead of following the wheel route, which left him wide open. But in reality, he did not have to go and chase that post because he had Keon Sab on the back end. So if you know the play I'm talking about, you know exactly what I'm referencing to. If you want to go back and take a look at that play, I'm sure you'll see what I'm talking about too. So it's just things like that, right? Like being disciplined, right? Being able to read and have that high discipline and make a play when needed. And I think the defense has failed to do that consistently. But again, they did do a better job creating turnovers, getting to the quarterback, getting that pressure. And I think Kane Womack heading this game against Tennessee has to, you know, bring pressure against a freshman quarterback in Nico. So I said all that to say, let's look at the matchup. 3:30 on ABC. Alabama is a 3-point favorite against Tennessee on the road. They are over or under in this game is 56.5. I think that, you know, looking at this matchup, you got Jalen Milroe, who's top five in the SEC right now when it comes to passing, with a little over 1,400 yards, on his way to 1,500 yards. And then you got Dylan Sampson, who's number one in the SEC in rushing with 699 yards. Next closest to him has 612 yards, and that's Parrish Jr. Out of Ole Miss. But Dylan Sampson, again, just under 700 yards, coming to this game, number one in SEC in rushing. And then from the receiving standpoint, you got Ryan Williams, second in the SEC in receiving yards with 576 on the year so far. And then defensively, you got Jahad Campbell and Deontay Lawson, who are leading the SEC, well, number three and number four in tackles in the SEC. So Jahad with 51, Lawson with 50. So biggest matchup I'm looking at right now, obviously our defense versus Tennessee's offense. I'm not worried about the offense going up against Tennessee's defense. Now, I will say that we do have to do a better job of, you know, making sure we're protecting Milroe, because offensive line did not do that great of a job when it came to pass protection on the best defensive end in probably the SEC at South Carolina. So keeping that pocket clean for Milroe so he can make his reads and dish the ball to who he needs to dish it to is going to be important. And then also with Milroe not standing in the pocket and holding on to the ball too long, right? I think, you know, sometimes he gets caught slipping with that, but and then he cannot make those mistakes that he made last weekend, just making a careless throw for an interception, running backwards into the end zone for a safety and you know, getting the intentional grounding. So just has to be better, right? Be better with the football, protecting the ball, take what the defense is giving you, take your shots, and take off and run when need be, right? But don't stand back there holding on to the ball, because I can almost guarantee you that Tennessee is going to bring the pressure and try to get and try to rattle Milroe. So, but defensively, right? I think that, you know, you got a young quarterback again in Nico, a freshman. I think that, you know, we need to bring that pressure, the same aggressive defense that we had against Georgia in that first half. We have not gotten back to that yet, and I would love to see us get back to that in this game. So Kane Womack, I need, you know, we need to get more pressure. We need to disguise some looks. And then on the back end, right, if we don't get to the quarterback, right, we need to be disciplined down the field. Need to be disciplined down the field anyway, but I want to see some better play from our secondary, not blowing coverages, being disciplined, being sticky in coverage, like whatever we need to do. But I need to see us flying around more defensively, and I need to see the guys making plays. And, you know, I think that, you know, this is a good opportunity for Alabama to show and get back to who we know that they have the capability to be, right? We've seen them in just a half against Georgia do what we know they're capable of doing, but it's about having that confidence and going out there and executing. So that's the matchup I'm most excited to look to see. And then, of course, Ryan Williams, you know, definitely want to see him do his thing. I know he had a quiet game on last Saturday, but that had a lot to do with, you know, just not having the time to give him the ball. I know Jalen overthrew him at one point too, but yeah, no, I think that good opportunity for the Tide, show you know, the country what they're made of, and prove that they are, you know, one of the best teams in college football. Despite the struggles that they've had, right? I think that, you know, this is a good opportunity. And then, you know, with Josh Heupel, that the type of offense that he runs, which is challenging, right, to defend. You know, he stacks two wide receivers on each side of the field, and he has one running back, and, you know, just it's a difficult type of offense to defend. But I don't think, you know, it's impossible to defend, right, if you're disciplined. So, that's what I'm looking forward to seeing, and let's see what happens. And then I obviously, like, I'm previewing the games, and I'm going to give you guys my my picks at the end here. And then let's move on. We got number five, Georgia, on the road. Another tough test against number one, Texas. You got Texas coming off, like I said before, 34-3 blowout win against Oklahoma. And then you got Georgia coming off of a 34-24 win over Mississippi State. Really, like, pushed them all the way to the fourth quarter in that game. And so looking at this matchup, this will be the night game, 7:30 on ABC. Can't wait to lock in for this one. Texas is coming in at, as a 5-point favorite in this game. The over-under, believe it or not, is exactly the same as Bama, Tennessee, 56.5 points. So looking at this matchup, you have, you know, two teams that, you know, were predicted to go to the SEC championship game, and you look at Georgia being, you know, the team that everybody heading into the year was like, oh, this is the team that, you know, to beat, they own college football, and you saw what Alabama did, you know, even though they came back, I don't care, a loss is a loss, and then now, sitting in a situation where it's a must win. You know, Georgia needs to win this game. And, you know, I think that looking at Texas offensively, you know, being number two in the SEC behind Ole Miss in average yards per game, just under 500 at 495 per game. And then you got them also, their top four in passing per game. And then top five in rushing in the SEC, number one defensively in points allowed is just 6 points per game. So they do not give up a lot of points at all. So this is a really good matchup to watch. And then, you know, yards allowed on, number one in yards allowed right now, 229 a game. So, this is going to be a really good matchup. I think that, you know, looking at, the way Texas has been playing, I said it before, you know, they have shown that they are a tier right now, ahead of, you know, everybody, you know, right now. And I think that this will be their biggest test, you know, obviously. But I do think that with that electrifying offense that they have, in the way that, you know, Sarkisian is able to mix it up. I mean, they give defenses fits, right? The creativity of Steve Sarkisian is just, he's the best. You know, he's one of the best, if not the best, in all of college football when it comes to his play calling, right? And so you have to be, you know, you have to be literally alert at all times, because he could take a shot at you at any given moment, at any point on the field. So, I think that, you know, Georgia is vulnerable. You know, they're going into a hostile environment in Austin. This is a team who has given up big plays on the back end. You know, their defensive backs have you know, been beat quite often. I mean, you look at this team, and how many times did Alabama, you know, torch that secondary, right? And then you even look at the game against Mississippi State. I mean, giving up a touchdown, you know, a deep touchdown, and a couple of plays where they just, you know, they fell asleep back there, right? So their weakness is definitely in that secondary, and I think that, you know, they're coming at Texas at the wrong time, a team that can really challenge that secondary with the amount of shots that they take, and then Quinn Ewers being back. You know, this is, it'd be different if Arch Manning was there. You know, they might, you know, it probably would been a lot more challenging, but I think with Ewers there, a guy coming back off injury who's, you know, been there and understands this offense fully, it's going to be dangerous, right? I mean, you got guys, you know, they have playmakers all over the field. I mean, you got guys, you know, like Isaiah Bond, obviously he transferred from Alabama, but he's been, you know, he's been doing his thing there. You got Salias Bolden, and let's not forget about another guy who everybody, you know, is starting to talk about more, and that's Ryan Wingo. Wingo is, you know, leaving his mark. I mean, he's going to start, you know, he's a guy that in years to come will be, you know, one of the top receivers in the SEC and in college football. So it's what he's projected to be, I should say, from people. But yeah, this Texas team, you don't see a lot of fault or vulnerability, you know, on this team, you know, right now. And so, yeah, I think that this matchup is going to be one for the books, one for the ages. And if you're Georgia, again, you need to win this game. If you lose another top five game, one of the biggest games on your schedule, one of the two biggest games on your schedule, if they drop another one, it's going to be hard for them to convince, you know, the committee, anybody that they deserve to be in, you know, in the playoff, right? I think that after that, I mean, you would have to, I mean, even if they ran the table, they would fail to make the SEC championship game. They probably more than likely would fail to make the SEC championship game with two losses to, again, their two biggest matchups, right? So, we'll see what happens. And then after that, you know, obviously you got the Florida Georgia game, but then you still got to go to Ole Miss. You still got to go, you know, host Tennessee. You know, Florida's coming into town. I mean, Florida's a, you know, I'm not really too hype on the Florida Georgia game or Georgia Florida, however you want to say it. But the Ole Miss and the Tennessee game, those are still two tough games you still got to play. So we'll definitely see what happens. But let's get to our picks, right? So, I don't really have to spend a lot of time on this first one. I mean, you know, I'm rolling with the Tide. I think that, you know, despite the struggles that Alabama has had defensively on the back end and just being disciplined, I think that this is an opportunity for them to get back on track, for them to right the ship. I think, you know, again, you're facing a freshman quarterback who they could bait into making some mistakes. So I do expect a lot of pressure to be brought from Kane Womack. But again, I need better discipline on the back end. And a lot of that involves, you know, biggest thing I think we need to do and Kane Womack needs to do is don't sit one single high safety back there. We need to play two safeties, because if we leave one safety back there, we could get picked apart like that. So, again, I think we need to play two deep safeties front. You know, that front four, I think that they could get the pressure there. Getting Quay Rousseau back from injury is going to be big. Offensively, I think that Kendrick Law should be available to play. He was dressed out for the South Carolina game, but he did not end up, you know, being out there for real at all. I don't even think he played at all. So getting him back is going to be huge. And potentially Kobe Prentice, I know he was in concussion protocol, so he should be able to hopefully come back as well. So that's going to help the offense even more and open up some more opportunities for Ryan and Jeremy Bernard and those guys to really challenge that defense. And then also, I think that this is a good opportunity to get that running game going and take advantage of, you know, of Tennessee. So a Tennessee team who did lose one of their biggest defenders, you know, a important piece on their defense. That they lost. So, I think that Alabama will get back on track. I think that I trust the Tide. You know, I think that this is a good opportunity to show the world, you know, who we are, right? Like, let's show the world who we really are. And so, Roll Tide got him in. You know, winning this game. And let me say right now that the player that Tennessee lost that I was referring to is Keenan Pilley. So he tore his ACL and he's going to be out for the rest of the season, unfortunately, you know, for them, their middle linebacker and their team captain. So that's a huge loss. You know, that's the center of their defense. Hate to see that happen to anybody. But no, I think that there it's going to be an opportunity for us to, you know, Alabama to take advantage of that. And moving on to the next game, man, Georgia, Texas, again, looking at Texas, I think, you know, electrifying offense that they had. Not a lot of blemishes on this team. They are making their mark and doing big things so far with it this year. And then you got Georgia coming in. They're hungry, desperate to get a win against a top five opponent. And you know, with this being another hostile environment that they're going into, they are in again. They're in need of a win, but it don't matter how much they need a win. I'm rolling with the Texas Longhorns in this game. I'm going hook 'em. I think that Texas is going to challenge this Georgia defense all game long. I think that they, you know, with Quinn Ewers and the receiving core that they have and the just the complex offense that Steve Sarkisian runs, I think they're going to be able to take advantage of a secondary in Georgia who I do not think is strong at all. They're very vulnerable. They've been exposed time and time again. And I think that Texas is the team that the second team that's going to take advantage of that, similar to what Alabama did. And the key is just to keep the momentum going. Don't allow Georgia to get back into the game, right? And I think that that crowd will be electric. Again, hostile environment. And I am going to roll with Texas to get the win in this game. And I think that Georgia obviously is probably going to come in and, you know, they'll make their plays. But overall, I think that the way that Texas is able to move down the field and, you know, the type of defense that they're playing right now, obviously this is the best offense that they're going to face in Georgia. But Carson Beck doesn't, you know, move me that much, right? I mean, he is known to throw interceptions. So he will, you know, give you opportunities, give Texas' defense opportunities to take the ball away, and they have to take advantage of that. And I expect them to probably, you know, try to rely heavily on their running game to you know, obviously open up the pass game. But ultimately, I think Texas comes out with the victory. So I'm going Alabama, I'm going Texas, and those are my picks. But again, those are the two biggest matchups this weekend. You also got, you know, just to give you some other matchups, you got number 8 LSU going on the road to face Arkansas. Arkansas team that knocked off a Tennessee team, you know. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. You got Miami going on the road to Louisville. So that'll be an interesting matchup. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that shakes up. And other than that, you know, A&M and Mississippi State, not too excited about that one at all. But again, two biggest ones that I mentioned are the two best ones. So, yeah, that wraps up everything. I appreciate everybody sticking with me today. And again, giving me some of your time. Love to chat with y'all about sports. And look, keep it locked. Be back to do it again on the next one. So be blessed. Y'all stay warm out here. And yes, make sure you got a jacket, man. It's cold weather. It's been, like I said, it came in. It really ran up on us. Like I said, you know, at the beginning of the show, I woke up, I was like, ooh, it's cold, man. But yeah, look, again, appreciate y'all. Appreciate the love, the support. I'll catch y'all on the next one. Look, oh, and before I go, make sure you go out and vote. Get out and vote. I early voted on Tuesday and just got it out of the way. Make sure, and I encourage everybody, you know, make sure you go out and vote. The early voting period is going to last up until November the 1st. And then after that, obviously, you know, the regular polls will be open. But yes, get out here and vote. Exercise your right. And look, y'all know what to do. So, yeah, again, appreciate y'all. Peace. I'm out. Much love.